Relationships are tough, whether it's you're in a committed relationship with a partner, you're married, even businesses. It can be very challenging to continue to keep that relationship flourishing, especially when you have outside pressures. And coming from my own point of view, it's incredibly stressful sometimes to be a business owner and have children, especially children with disabilities. I remember when my son was younger, it seemed that more of our time, my wife and I's time, was spent focused on that. And we didn't really spend as much time as we probably should have in maintaining our relationship. And I'm sure I'm not the only one out there who experiences this. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just with children with disabilities. It could be your child has, if you have multiple children who do sports and all these other things, where you're competing outside activities, where you pretty much see each other right before you leave for work and then right before you go to bed, and everything else is running around either to work or to a child's activity, except doctor's appointments, what have you. And there's got to be a better way. And that's why I reached out to Eleni Paris. Eleni is a licensed marriage and family therapist in the Tampa Bay area with a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's degree in marriage and family therapy, both from Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University. She has over 20 years of professional experience, including clinical work, workshop and seminar presentations, discussion in support groups, writing contributions, collaborative work with various health professionals, and wellness coaching. She's also a clinical member of the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy and has been published in the Journal of Marital and Family Therapy. For those of you that have just tuning in, my name's Eric Jorgensen. I'm the host of the ABCs of Disability Planning. I'm also the founder of True North Disability Planning. And it's my mission to raise awareness of resources out there for you if you have a family member or you yourself have a disability. And this podcast is one of those ways of doing it. When you go to True North Disability Planning, you can find other tools like roadmaps to help you transition from high school into adulthood, or consultations with me to do individual one-on-one consulting. Today, it's going to be about you. I want you to, if anything that Eleni said resonates with you, please reach out to her. She's licensed in Florida, so she may not be able to give you advice if you live anywhere outside of Florida. But she may have resources for you to use. She may have other tools that you can use without giving clinical advice. And I say that about all of my guests. I really hope you reach out to them. I really hope you tap into their knowledge, their experience, their skills. And I'd love to hear from you what you think, or what you would like to hear, what you think I could be doing better, what you like about the podcast. You can reach out, Eric, at speciallyneedsnavigator.us, or you can leave a comment on the podcast player of your choice. Welcome, everyone. As I mentioned during the intro, I have with me a licensed marriage and family therapist, Eleni Paris. She's in the Florida area, and she and I are going to have a conversation today about what families can do to keep that spark, to keep the relationship going when you have a child with a disability. And Eleni, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be with you. Thanks.
I want to start with kind of a softball, because for me, I get a little confused with all the acronyms. So you're an LMFT.
Correct.
And you also, but you know, the ones I guess I'm used to seeing are like LCP. Well, you know, can you just kind of just, what's sure. The difference between a licensed family and marriage therapist versus
yes. Sure. So I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. You'll see some others that are, you'll see LCSW, which is a licensed clinical social worker. You'll see LPC or LMHC, which is a licensed professional counselor. And then, of course, you also see psychologists, psychiatrists, and, you know, we're kind of all housed within the mental health realm, of course.
When would somebody, and this is probably like therapy 101, but when would somebody go to to a, you know, licensed clinical social worker instead of a marriage therapist? I mean, can they do the same thing, or do you have specific training because you're a marriage therapist?
It's such a good question. Such a good question. So it's a little bit of both. So we do overlap, and there's a lot of professional counselors, social workers, marriage and family therapists that see a lot of similar issues, work with individuals, couples, and families. Absolutely. So you will see that across the board. But I would say in a marriage and family therapy program and training, we are immersed and highly trained in working with relationships with more than one person in the room, that interpersonal, interactional process, families, having a whole family in the room. So our training and our field work is really honed in on that, on the relationship and the family systems work.
Okay. And I may have flubbed a little bit when I was doing my intro, because I said in the intro, I didn't say this is what you did, but I said relationships include businesses, because I to me, when you go into a business partnership, it almost feels like a marriage. But was I way off base there? Or
just to understand, you were saying that you mean as far as working with business relationships?
Well, that's not what you do, but therapists can help with that.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. It helps. So the personal professional comes into play a lot. And yes, that relationship is strong too.
Okay. And then I took some words from your website that you know, in terms of what types of therapies you do, and you say you're solution oriented, emotionally focused, and narrative.
Yeah.
So for the layperson, I think I know what solution oriented means. It seems like that's kind of obvious. I mean, I guess they're all kind of obvious, but how do they tie in with what a family can expect when they're, is that something they should be looking for when they're going to visit a therapist's website, of what kind of therapy the therapist does? Or
sure. If they're aware of that, you know, sometimes people aren't kind of aware of the different kind of approaches and models. Some people are, and they do look for specific approaches and models. So sure, I'll just break it down a little bit. Solution focused is exactly kind of like you said, it's self-explanatory, but it's very strength focused, positive focused, searching, seeking, finding the solutions that fit for someone's life. I tend to naturally be a very hopeful, positive person. So it's very easy. It comes easy to me. I was specifically trained in that, you know, back in the day too. So it's been with me throughout. That being said, and I tell people this a lot, especially with couples and families and relationships, although that's wonderful and we're always talking about solutions, when I have, as an example, a couple in the room, I always want them to know it's going to be a place for them and a space for them. We're going to go a little bit deeper. We're going to get more focused on connecting within their emotions, going deeper than just, because when we're talking about solutions, we're rational, we're intellectual. That's fantastic. That has a very good and important place. I love that. But in therapy, also for the healing, for the growing, for the connecting, we want to go a level deeper. And we want to make sure that we have some really good language about what's happening for people emotionally. It's really a game changer. It's something that really shifts the therapy into something richer and deeper.
Okay.
Long lasting for the couples as well. And the narrative is basically that I just like to honor that everybody has their own unique story. So as people tell me their story, that's going to also help me in how I'm going to guide them and help them. And I want to use their language. I want to understand the different chapters of their life, what it meant, how it was defined, how that impacts the next, you know, that kind of thing. So they all play hand in hand together.
So it sounds like in your practice, you tend to do more listening than talking.
I like to say it's a lot of both. I mean, and that's where the artistry comes in as well. You know, as a therapist, I kind of know when you have the time to sit back and listen more. Listening is critical, just like I teach my couples, a very critical piece to know what is needed next, what is desired next, what might be most helpful next. But then a lot of times, you know, people are seeking some guidance and reflection. And of course, I'm going to share. And it's very conversational. So another word that I use on my website is it's very collaborative. So I want people to know when they come in, yes, am I an expert in my field and how I'm trained to work with you? Yes. But I tell my clients, you're the experts of your lives. So you're going to be teaching me a lot about what's important to you and how you live your life. And then I take it from there and it becomes a dance. But so it's very collaborative.
Okay. Yeah. And so I think I told you the first time we talked, I'm not super familiar with therapy. So even, you know, bear with me. I've taken classes in, you know, social work and all that to try to be squishier. But at the end of the day, I'm an engineer. So thank you for explaining all this. Sure. So diving into families whose children have disabilities. And again, in the intro, I said it's not just families with disabilities. It could also be you have children without disabilities, but you're running errands all day. So just, you get up in the morning, you get the kids to school, you go to work, you come home, you take them to sports or whatever, dance or what have you. and then you go to bed. And there's never time for couples to be couples. Mm-hmm. Like what brought them together, right?
Absolutely. It's so easy, yes, to get into that, you know, daily rut and to kind of lose that initial focus of when you first meet and fall in love and whatnot. It takes a lot of work and creativity to keep it going. And then you add the other layer of having a special needs child with the various disabilities, abilities and whatnot into the mix. And it really adds just, it's really a very unique journey, a very unique and of course can be exhausting journey. And I know it personally well, if it's okay that I add that piece.
Please.
Please. And I'm also a mom of a special needs girl. Her name is Sophia. She's 17 years old. She is cognitively disabled and speech impaired. She's very physically able. She's kind of all over the map developmentally, but she, you know, basically her speech is that of maybe an 18-month-old and her cognitive comprehension is all over the map, depending on what we're talking about. But, you know, lots of times it's like you're dealing with a toddler in different ways, although she's a very big girl. And also she's like a teenager in lots of ways too. So, you know, you kind of match depending on what's happening. So I understand, you know, firsthand. I've also been on the other side of it all because my clinical work, I've been in the field for 20 years and been involved on many levels within the profession. My clinical work was always in batches, depending on what was going on with my Sophia, of course. So I've been on the other side of what I am very honest about it. You know, you can be brought to your knees really in that exasperation.
Yeah.
Because there's so much involved. Yeah.
And what I see on Facebook, toxic, not my favorite place, but what I see and what I hear frequently is one partner saying they're doing all the work. And I'm not going to assign gender roles or anything. It's just one partner will say, I'm doing all the work. My partner doesn't see me, hear me, acknowledge me. That doesn't happen overnight though, right? There's warning signs, I would think, right?
Yeah. I think there are warning signs, but what I was trying to think about and reflect back, you know, a lot of times by the time people call me, they've hit a wall is what I typically say. And I'm going to definitely talk about mainly right now, let's say that the families with special needs children.
Yes.
Maybe say that about any couple, right? But I'm just going to use this as a main example right now. So if they were to reflect back and look, this is where I just want people to give themselves some grace. I think that there are certain stages in our children's development, and especially with special needs, we are juggling plates that we never even thought would be, you know, in our world at all. And we're overwhelmed. We're grasping at straws. We're learning. We're relearning. We get broken. We rebuild. And it's all happening sometimes within day to day. So when you look back on that, I think it makes a lot of sense that even if there were warning signs, the first thing you were thinking is, what does my child need right now? I have to make the next doctor's appointment. I need to find out this insurance question, right? All of those different things. So I think even if they were to look back and we could say, oh, that could have been a warning sign, that could have been, I think it makes a lot of sense that all of a sudden, fast forward, and they go, whoa, what happened? How did we end up here? What happened all those years? How are we here right now? And I just want people to just remember that we can't always catch it. But if it doesn't matter, if you do catch it though, eventually, just like when they say it's better late than never, you've caught it. And that's the most important piece, is that you've actually caught it, even if it's a little bit later than what's late. I don't know. That's the thing.
So instead of feeling like it's hopeless, or, you know, because I think that's the, and I obviously I'm not in anybody's head, but I, knowing from my own personal experience, my wife and I, you know, part of it was me being a geo bachelor for 5 years. That made it really tough on top of that, right? Because I had my stressors that when I came home for 2 or 3 weeks, I just wanted to decompress.
Right.
And she was looking for an opportunity for her to decompress because, oh, she's finally got some help.
Yeah.
You know, but it wasn't something we ever talked about. And in hindsight, it's easy for me to say, man, I really wish we had communicated more, instead of just assuming that we each knew what the other needed.
Yes. I think what I would hope over time is that couples will start to look at couple care, just like we talk about self-care. So I actually wrote a blog on this. I believe self-care for special needs parents is not just, oh, it's important, oh, it's a good thing. I find it critical. Critical, like as if you were to put it on your date book, like any other appointment. Very, very, very important. We need to catch our breath. There is something around the bend always within our world. We have to be ready, strong, positive. And I believe that's the same with couples. So I guess if there are couples, you know, in the younger stages or the earlier stages of kind of the journey with their children and they're listening, that would be one thing to say. We hear so much about self-care, and then you want to look at the couple care, you know, equally as important, as critical. And what do we need to do to focus on that?
Can we talk a little bit about self-care? Because I may get some hate mail for this, but I just feel like it's an overused trope at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, you see it all the time.
I know.
And it's this, oh, do a bubble bath or whatever. And it's like, you don't always have that. I mean, sometimes you just lock yourself in the bathroom for 10 minutes, or maybe that's just me, but...
It's so true. It is so true. You have to tackle it like a job. So it is going to actually be something that you are going to have to put some time and energy. I tell people all the time, taking really good care of yourself is a really hard job. I mean, it's a full-time. There is so much to think about on so many different levels to make it happen. And for some people, Eric, you're right. For some people, it might be like, oh my gosh, when I went into the bathroom for 10 minutes and shut the door and just took a breath, that was really helpful. I need to do that now, like every day on purpose.
Yeah, every day. I mean, for me, like my self-care now is I got a German Shepherd and he requires a lot of, and he's got a lot of energy. So he and I will go for, we'll leave the house around 6:30 in the morning and we'll get back around 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's a nice,
yes,
hoorah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I need it.
And you commit to it.
Yeah, whether it's raining, I bring an umbrella. I don't. I need it. I need that physical activity. You know, and it's not like I'm out running or anything, but it does. The physical activity makes a difference too.
Well, and it's a gift to everybody around you. And I learned it. I'll never forget when my girls were little, and it was really stressful. I was very stressed with Sophia's things. I'm still not sure it was happening because our journey with her is a slow unfolding process. And I was home with them. And I remember I finally found this gym that had this great daycare center for the girls too. And I'll never forget how before I took them, I was, you know, upset and I was stressed and I dropped them off. I'd go do my workout and then I go pick them up and I'd be like, I miss you so much. You know, and they look at me like, who are you? You are not the same mom who dropped us off. But I'll never forget that because I know that it helped in my parenting. It helped in my marriage. So even though some people feel selfish about it, it's really a gift to everybody.
I think that's something we need to pull the string on. This feeling of being selfish if you're doing something for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And same with couples. So a lot of couples actually sometimes feel that, you know, by tending to themselves, whether, you know, they step out alone or putting a boundary around the kids, constantly tugging on them to say, this is mommy and daddy time for a few minutes. Or I'm in the middle of talking to daddy. I'll be with you in a few minutes. Anything that puts a boundary that just shows the protectiveness around the couplehood, they feel guilty doing that as well. And they don't realize what a gift that is to the children too, because oftentimes, you know, the children's rock is, you know, the parents' marriage and the relationship in the house. So.
But what would you say if a mom or a dad said, but Eleni, you don't understand. We have to be there for our kid all the time. We can't tell them no.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they came to therapy and said that, I would want to explore that a little bit more. I'd want to know what they meant by that. Okay. Because I do want to honor, you know, there are some disabilities at different stages until somebody gets some extra help that they cannot, they feel like they cannot, maybe they can't truly leave that child alone in any way, shape, or form. I understand that more in a supervision level, as far as my daughter always needs some kind of supervision, but there could be something more medically needed.
Okay.
And so then I would want to explore, what do you mean by that? So if they explain that to me, that makes sense. Then might we explain, so what keeps you from accessing extra help? You know, is it a trust issue? Is it a financial issue? That's when we might get into discussions into your specialty too, and helping people connect with what services are out there for them. So I would want to make sure I understand clearly, because even though we have as caregivers this thread of understanding, there are so many differences, of course, you know, in our children's backgrounds and needs.
And I think pulling that thread, it could help the spouse who wasn't home all the time understand more too. And again, I'm just putting my hat on when I would come home. Now I understand. My wife died 10 years ago and I've been a single dad. I see a lot more now.
Yes.
When she was alive, I'm like, what are you talking about? This is ridiculous, right? And
so
when you pull that thread with the other person there, I think I could see how that would help, because then that other person may listen with fresh ears.
I love that you brought that up because that's the beautiful dance about couples work. So some people say, well, what does it look like? What does it mean when we're sitting in there with us? Are you just teaching us something? Are you talking at? Are you just listening? Are you listening to us fight the whole, what does it look like? You know? So it's a little bit of all the above, right? There's a lot of different pieces to it. But one thing that I would like to say that's really beautiful is when they're sitting next to each other and one person is processing with me. So let's say the husband's processing with me about something the wife is, they're learning. They might learn something they never knew. For whatever reason, because there's not anybody else in their life asking some of the questions that I'm asking, right? So it triggers a thought, a feeling, and whatnot. And then all of a sudden, the spouse goes, I didn't know that. And it either becomes a new empathic response that the other spouse really needed, or it's a new, like, I didn't know that. Now that I know, I'm going to do something about that. Yeah. So, because sometimes people just say, I just want to know. Like, I can't read, you know, we can't mind read. So they learn. And then, of course, I do have them. There are times, most of the time, I won't say, I don't mean most of the time of my therapy sessions with them, but along the journey at some point, most of my couples, if not all, we will find a way to also have them face one another and practice some very rich communication techniques so they can experience what it's like with one another, to truly listen to one another, learn from one another, and grow in that way.
Yeah. And I can see the value in that. I've been working with a coach now for 3 or 4 years. And it's changed all of my relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not therapy. She's not a therapist, but
what you mean?
But if when I'm working with her, it forces me to think about what I'm saying, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm using her for my business and she's not in my business day to day. So I have to make sure I'm communicating very clearly to her. Well, right. Once I'm learning how to do that, it carries over to other relationships because I'm trying to talk it out. I don't think I'm sitting there going, how can I make this more clear? Just by virtue of me doing that over and over with the coach, it has become it's like a new pathway in my brain or something. And it's something I'm trying to do with other people too, because it yields better results. And I imagine therapy is probably very similar.
Yes. They learn without even knowing that they're learning in a way, right? And I tell people, you can't undo what you've learned in here now. You can't undo it. I'm not saying that everything is resolved, you know, all the time. And there are people that come in that have this, it doesn't happen very often, Eric, but there are some people where, let's say I have a couple that comes in, one person kind of is already out the door, but they wanted to give it one last shot. So I've seen lots of miraculous, beautiful shifts toward growth, which is great. And there's some people that really just kind of wanted to come in and just really openly talk about how they can't do it anymore. It doesn't happen very often. There is something called discernment counseling, you know, where they're kind of trying to discern what their next step is. That is a thing. But what I was going to say is, for the couples that come in, I mean, no matter what, especially the ones that are in there for the long haul and they're in there to learn and grow and connect on a deeper level, it can never be undone. So even if they go back, I told them, even if you feel like you're going to have, you know, look, even when you're done with therapy, things aren't perfect. Doesn't mean you're never going to argue and never disagree or whatnot. But you are going to have this whole new way now. You have learned something new about each other, about yourselves. I've had you practice things in between to hopefully implement a new way of being with one another. And you can't undo it. So it's a beautiful thing.
And with that in mind, do people have to wait until there's problems to reach out to a therapist? I mean, I would imagine there's stuff you can do that's preventative, and maybe not the best language, but
actually, no, there are actually, and they even have there's some assessments out there. If you've heard of Prepare and Rich, I'm actually certified in that, but a lot of times premarital couples will go take this inventory.
What's it called? Prepare and what?
Prepare and Rich. Prepare/Enrich.
Okay.
So premarital couples might want to do this inventory, learn about each other, and have premarital counseling. But they even have it for marriages that want to just enrich their relationship, where they take this inventory and see all the areas they want to work on. I'm just giving you that as an example. I have had people come to me and they have issues, but maybe not as strong as, you know, the other couple that just came in or whatever. They want to do more preventative, like you said. But I do have to say, most of the times, by the time we get the phone call, typically they're struggling.
Well, if they're listening to this podcast, maybe we'll stop that cycle, right?
Yeah.
Because it's something my fiance and I have talked about, because I'm widowed. I've got my own baggage, right? And she's divorced. So there's, that's something she and I have talked about before we move into before we get married and stuff, is something we want to have, not because we're having any problems, but I'd rather, you know, things have a way of, you know, hiding beneath the surface, right? You never know until you know. And
yes.
Well, I'd rather do it in a controlled environment.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Yes, that would be a fantastic. Because I do see, and I think now, so it's interesting. That'd be really cool for more and more couples to look at it that way too, because I do think a lot of individuals are gearing a little more toward that. You know, a lot of people are very open about, there's still some stigma, of course, we're trying to break that and help people with that. But you'll hear people out at lunch, oh, I got to leave, I got to go see my therapist. You know, like they're very open about it. I think what happens with couples work, though, becomes a little bit more personal, because if they say, you know, out loud, we're about to go see our therapist, people automatically assume what's wrong in your marriage, yeah. You know, so it becomes a whole other layer of privacy.
Right.
Some people are open, of course, it's a very personal decision and what they share. But that would be wonderful. And I have worked with couples that wanted to be more preventative, and it is so cool to see how they want to learn about themselves and each other. And it's, you can't go wrong with it, really. You know, you're, and so maybe for the couples that have, you know, special needs children, to know, to remember there's the self-care and there's the couple care. And it's very critical.
Yeah.
It's onto both.
And I think, in my opinion, again, this is hindsight for me. It's something I kind of wish, not kind of, I wish my wife and I had done. When my son got his diagnosis, I wish we had seen a therapist to help us process. Because yeah. I mean, I definitely processed it very differently than she did. And we didn't talk about it, you know.
That is such an amazing point. And I think that, I bet you a lot of people listening to this will resonate with that. Because that diagnosis or the realization or whatever it might be, the conversation when you realize you're going down a different path with your child. And it's hard. You're right. That's a great place for people to say, you know what, that we should, we could use some extra support around this.
Yeah. I mean, for me, Eleni, there was a couple points. There was that, there was the conversation about, should my son be in a certificate program or a diploma? You know, because there's that ego tie. And again, this is just for me. Anybody out there listening, I'm not saying this is a blanket statement.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, there was an ego associated with my kid getting a diploma, you know, and it actually took me hiring, after my wife died, and me hiring an education advocate, and the education advocate saying, well, I really agree with the school, he's better suited for the certificate, for me to let go of that. You can almost see the friction there, right? Where my wife all along wanted the certificate, and, you know, I didn't really understand it well enough. I'm going to, you know.
Yeah. We have to give up a lot of expectation. And it just goes in waves, because I think at the initial, whether it's a diagnosis or again, a realization, you get, you know, I don't know, you just feel like you get kicked in the stomach, you know, yep. for a moment. And then you can kind of rise up and celebrate. Then you start celebrating all of the accomplishments and all of the things that are beautiful. And there's so many blessings wrapped up in it.
Yep.
But then there's another stage again.
Yep.
Well, you feel like you get kicked in the stomach again, whether it's something new that's come up for them, or something you realize, I don't know, some other hope that you feel like has been dimmed a bit.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ebb and flow.
Well, and I feel like some people need the coaching, the training on how to celebrate. Like they've learned how to see all the negative.
Yeah.
And then they just, everything is okay. That's great. But what's over the next hill?
So
they
true.
Can't even just, and I'm the worst about celebrating accomplishments, but I'm not looking for the next negative thing. For me, it's like, okay, I've accomplished it. Time out, move. And I recognize that it's something I'm trying to improve on. But then there's this other side of it where, yeah, I found $20, but I'm probably gonna get COVID because I picked it up. You know what I mean?
You're more of like a realist, is what you're saying.
That's not what I look at it as, for sure. Maybe I'm just Pollyanna.
But you're also very real. You're saying you're very real about like what's before you and how you deal with it. And I love that you brought that up too, because I think that's when I talked about that natural way that I work as a solution oriented therapist. Naturally, I'm very hopeful. I don't think I'd be able to feel and celebrate, you know, so much of my life with all the challenges I have before me if I didn't have that hope.
Right.
And I use that word a lot on my website too, because I think a lot of people start to lose that. And hope gives us that. My gosh, we need that. We need that on a daily basis, whether it's hope for something in the next moment, in the next day, in the next week, the next year. So that is something that we hone in on. And I always tell my clients this. I can't let go of that. Like, I will hold on to hope no matter what. That stays there with me in all throughout all of my work.
And is that something people can learn how to do? I don't know if I'm asking the right question, but is that something people can learn how to do? Or So I've met some, so they're just so negative, and it's like, mm-hmm. I don't even want to be around you. Is this something they can, or I mean, I guess it would be they'd have to want to, but it, I mean, is this something that can be trained, or is it?
So it reminds me a little bit of, you know, there's coaching with the mindset, you know, okay. There are coaching pieces that come into therapy. I also do some life coaching separate of that. So there's a difference for sure. Okay. But within the therapy realm, you can help people with their mindset. And then if it's really difficult and it's challenging, that's when we go a layer deeper too. We want to understand maybe people's experience with hope or joy, finding the blessings and things, finding the hope in things. What does that mean to them? Is it foreign to them? Maybe they, you know, that's when you kind of maybe dig in a little more to various family relationships and upbringings, culture. I mean, there's so many layers to it.
But you're highlighting why you don't want to try doing this on your own, right? You don't want to try to say, oh, I'm going to fix myself.
Say that again. So you're wondering.
To me, it feels like you're highlighting the advantages of working with a therapist, somebody who's trained to ask the right questions at the right time.
Right.
Absolutely. Instead of saying, well, I'm just going to go figure this out on my own. I've got a bottle of Jack and, you know, I've got this weekend. I'm just going to muscle through it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is what we're here for. That is what you hire us for, really, you know, is to feel like we have a specific training to help you with something that would be very, whether it be difficult, you know, for you to navigate on your own. It's hard. It's like when you say, I need to have an outside perspective, if you will, on something. I can't see anything in front of me. I need you, even if it's something physical, I need you to come over here and take a look at this. I can't see this room. Can you help me redecorate it? And so everything looks perfect to me. What are you going to see? The person walks in and all of a sudden finds a whole new way of putting something together. They're not in it all the time. So it's something like that, really. It's that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the analogy I hear a lot is you can't read the label if you're inside the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I like your analogy of the living room or walking into a room to redecorate, because I guarantee you I've walked through my room thousands of times, and then somebody could come in and say, well, have you thought about doing this and really optimizing the space? I'm like, no.
Exactly. Because you're seeing it all, and you think you've done a lot of different things, because I don't want to negate or minimize the people that really try and they read self-help books. And there are people, depending on where they're at in their mental health, that can read, learn, go to workshop. That's what those are for too. We want them to learn and they can grow from that. Absolutely. So therapy, by the time people want to go to therapy, unless they're using it, like you said, for a springboard to enriching, enhancing the relationship, they're in an overall good place. Most people are also there to heal from something in conjunction with finding solutions.
Okay.
So I do tell people that when we talk about, sometimes people ask me, what's the difference between, you know, therapy and coaching, if you will, you know? So, and the therapy piece adds that mental health treatment for past traumas, for things okay. that people need to heal from, in addition to processing, brainstorming, and finding solutions.
Okay.
And something I like to tell people is therapy is a place where you come and you take you pause. Okay. So, you know, people always talk about, well, I'm in a fork in a road. I need to make this decision. Are we going to go this way or that way? Or am I going to do this? Or are we going to do that? So therapy is a place to come and pause and heal. And yes, you might be taking steps in a certain direction, but then you might also pause again and heal from something else. It's a little bit slower. It's more in depth.
Very cool. And, you know, again, I can see where, like I told you, that's why my fiance and we want to do that, right? Because we both have our baggage. And, you know, I'm sure talking to the therapist is going to bring stuff up that, you know, I would, and I'm speaking for myself because I don't want to speak for her, that I would have thought was dead and gone, you know,
right.
And maybe it's not, you know, because I'm, you know, we do have a way of carrying that stuff with us, right?
Sure. Yes. Yeah. It does happen naturally. There's something about the therapy space. And I'm going to talk again about the parents with special needs children, but it could be for anybody again, but I think they come in and they sit down, especially, so I'm doing a lot of virtual, but I'm going to be in my in-person space soon. And I have done a lot of in-person as well, where they sit down in front of you and it's like, it's like a respite for them. So we know the word respite for special needs parents that get this break and help, right? So they feel that when they come in the therapy room, and all of a sudden it's like, yes, take over and help us see and feel and work on what we just can't do on our own. That's the other piece. It's not that they're not capable of it. They're exhausted.
Right.
some people are like, you think we're going to sit down and face each other at the end of the day and talk about why we're mad and what led us to be mad? And of course, it's a beautiful thing. And I want to teach them to do that over time, right? But at the beginning, that is going to be one of the biggest feelings they have, is they sit and they go, oh my gosh, we need this thing. We need someone to just take over and help us navigate this very messy and hard process.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to change directions.
Sure.
You know, I think one of the barriers to therapy is cost. Yeah, I mean, if we're being completely transparent, I think, you know, more and more insurance companies, they want a diagnosis, which can be, correct, you know, that can have negative implications down the road if you're going for insurance, if you're going for a job,
right,
if you're trying to get a security clearance. So, you know, therapists like yourself, I will often do private pay, mm-hmm, you know, to avoid having to give somebody a label in air quotes,
yes,
you know, and, but cost is a problem because professionals are professionals, right? They have, yes, bills to pay. They have to, you know.
Yes.
Do you know of any options? And I'm asking because I don't. Do you know options for families out there for, you know, for mental health? Is there a way? Do employers offer something that doesn't require a diagnosis? Or
okay, so as far as employers, I think most of the employers that offer something, it typically is through the insurance. Well, okay. Not always. Sometimes they do have other ways. I'm sorry. I think there's both. So I think, okay, from employers, they do have both options where they,
yeah,
might.
Yeah, I'm asking out of ignorance. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's okay. That's okay. What I was going to say to you, you know, as far as, so I've been on the other side, so I understand the importance and how helpful it is to find somebody with insurance. So I get that too. So now I'm going to talk to you from this side, and I don't take insurance, and I am private pay. It does help with confidentiality. It also keeps the clinical work very clean. So when you come in to meet with me, I don't need to ask you, did you follow up with your insurance? Or your insurance just sent me all this paper. I have to fill this out. I need this extra information from you. But what happened to the payments from, you know, there's like all kinds, it impedes. So there's pluses and minuses. As far as the fees go, you know, there are a lot of therapists that would do sliding scale also. And you can just, you know, you can talk to them to see if they're willing to come down, you know, that, especially if they own their own practice. As far as the employers, it's going to be definitely a case by case, you know, where they have to inquire a little bit about that. But I believe that there are both. I know for sure through the insurances, but I know sometimes they'll also get a special, you know, like an employer's card, you know, where they, okay, can use those funds.
Yeah. And you're usually, I think, limited to like 10 appointments or something, or.
Right. Yeah.
So the other question I have is, I mean, that wasn't really a question. That was more of a conversation about, you know, we acknowledge it's hard, but you're investing in yourself. You're investing in your relationship. It's a lot more expensive if you end up self-medicating with alcohol or other drugs, or you just end up being in a relationship where you guys are roommates instead of, you know, partners.
Right. They have to look at it as like an investment. So it's a lifetime investment for their relationship and their family. Yeah. And so I think what I have found, a lot of people really feel very good about putting their money into that. It starts to feel like this amazing, I don't know, they just feel so good about it. They feel like it's such an important decision for everybody.
I would agree.
So I've really found a lot of, and I've actually found a lot of people that didn't want to work with their insurances. It was, yeah, too much hindrance for them, or they did have these limitations on how many, and they wanted to be more in control of it all. Yeah. So that's another piece to it.
This just popped up, so it's not my original question I had for you, but do family therapists work with children? So again, you have a child with a disability, maybe they have a physical disability, and there's, or you know, whatever the disability is, but there's that friction now between mom and dad, or dad and the child, you know, they're, yes, you know, you're adding another person to the mix, especially somebody as they get older and start wanting to maybe assert their independence.
Yes. So they're trained to work with, and often do with, all ages and relationships, that they're focused on the family system.
Okay.
That being said, you know, sometimes the child requires more so. So sometimes they'll have a little bit of both, if you will. Maybe the child needs an individual therapist because they need to have that one-on-one intensive, you know, therapeutic work. And then the family therapist is going to be working more on the relationships, almost like a family consultant at times too, to, okay, kind of, sometimes depending on what the issue is, there's a lot to orchestrate before you hone in on what the crux of which relationships, you know, need the most work. And that's where the training is very valuable as a licensed marriage and family therapist, that we can kind of, we've had that experience in the training to have a family of four or five and know how, what's that going to look like?
Right.
Because family
so you could bring in-laws into if you wanted to, if the, you know,
yes.
Because yeah. when I think about families whose children have disabilities, it's very often not just the parents who are involved in the caretaking. You know, you'll often have parents or grandparents.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's a yes. very dynamic, fluid kind of.
It's a lot of teamwork. And so you want to be thoughtful and invite whomever would make sense. And, you know, who's going to help with, again, whatever their goals are relationship wise. And maybe there's also people that you need to be in touch with, school counselors, doctors, there are other therapists as part of the big team. So it kind of depends. But so family therapy doesn't always look like where everybody's in the room always at the same time. And okay. it's maybe at the beginning, you're building up by getting to know everybody individually, maybe dyads, maybe triads, maybe you start to hone in and realize, oh my gosh, they thought they all four needed to come in, but really the mom and the son have a specific, they, you know, that seems to be priority. And then after they kind of hammer out a couple of their things and, you know, dad wants to come into the picture and that kind of thing. And that's, again, where the artistry of the therapy kind of comes in, is to know how it would look for that specific family.
Okay. Very cool. Thank you, Eleni. So I guess the last question I would have for you would be, what can families do to figure out if the therapist is a good fit?
That's a great question. Typically, most of us, as you'll see when you visit a lot of people's websites, we offer a free consultation. So I offer a free 20-minute consultation to chat, whether it's over the phone or virtual or when I'm in person, if they'd rather come in person, whatever was most comfortable for them, and feel comfortable, you know, to ask the questions and see if it's a good fit for both sides. Sometimes it could just be a scheduling thing, right? But then it could become something else. Maybe there's an issue that I feel would be, you know, best, or I'm not as trained in or as comfortable in. I'd be very honest with them about that. Sometimes people just feel like they need to just be with you for a moment and just talk with you to see how comfortable they feel. So the consultations are very important. Yes, you get to someone's website first and you can visit and read all about it, but having that conversation, I think, is going to be critical to the next step.
Yeah. I mean, I ask that because I think about my personal bias. You know, I don't necessarily want to talk to somebody who doesn't know anything about disabilities.
Yeah.
If I did have things I wanted to talk about from my military service, I would want to talk to somebody who understood veterans. You know, talking to somebody who's never been in the military, or, well, my dad was in the military. Yeah, no, not the same thing, you know.
Yeah, so I think that's a very good point. So you would want to, as a client, think about what's really, really important to me right now. That I want to, because a lot of people, it's their first time, like you said, they've never, some people have had therapists and they can kind of compare, they know that this worked, this didn't work, or maybe they loved that therapist, but they moved, whatever it might be. And that's important for us as therapists to ask what worked, what did you like, what was helpful to you at the time. But for people that have never done it, I and my hat goes off to them, because it is a hard step to take. I understand that. So they should ask themselves, what's important for me to know? And oftentimes it is a feel, it's a fit in the conversation as well, that yeah. they might be seeking. They don't even realize it until they're having that conversation that, oh, wait, this is who I want to work with. I feel very comfortable with what you're telling me, or with your background, or your treatment modalities, whatever it might be.
Yeah. And that makes sense, Eleni, because I've told people, you know, when you're hiring an attorney or a financial advisor, you need to make sure this is somebody you're very comfortable having an ongoing conversation with. You know, a therapist even more so, because you're going to be really talking about some hard topics, I imagine.
Yes, it's very personal. I think it makes a lot of sense to me that people, it doesn't surprise me at all if people are going to be, in fact, we encourage people to talk to a couple, you know, two or three, if they have the time or desire. I mean, sometimes you feel like you get the right fit right off the bat. That's fantastic. But this is a very important step. It's a big investment too. I get that. It's time, it's money, and it's your personal life, you know, so you should feel very comfortable, and you should feel like this is going to be very important for me. I feel really good around this person. I trust that. And the trust takes time to build, of course, but enough to begin. I feel like I've either read what I like, I've talked with them, and I felt good about what I heard, you know, so, but those consultations are very helpful.
Well, I like your website, and I don't know how many other therapists do this, but I feel like reading your blogs, you can hear your voice. You know, like you get a feel for who you are. I bookmarked the blog you wrote in June about marital therapy for parents, especially its children, because I want to include the link in my show notes. Because I think it's really important to highlight that, you know, this is how I think. Not that therapists who don't have blogs that they're any better or any worse. It's just
right.
I personally, when I'm looking for professionals, be it attorneys, I want to see what attorneys have written. Mm-hmm. Are they active? What types of organizations are they members of? How, because if you're a member of an organization, and this is Eric's bias, I'm owning this, but if you're a member of an organization, odds are you're going to be more current with what's out there being taught about. Whereas if you're not, in my mind, again, my bias, then how current are you? Are you really keeping up with the latest and greatest? I mean, I'm going to a conference because I want to learn what's going on. I don't want to just assume, oh, I'm living it. I know what I need to know. Well, I'm hoping my professionals that I'm working with are the same way. I want them to constantly be developing. Yeah. I don't need to know what CEU did, but I want to know, show me that you're trying to stay engaged. That was a bit of
and with that, no, I appreciate that. And so what I hear you saying with that particular blog, what may have also spoken to you is, you know, with the special needs, that it's a specific, some specific needs and challenges, if you will. And so I cannot help but combine my personal professional into that realm. There's ways of extracting it in the sense of me staying professional. I'm not there, you know, to just share all my stories and whatnot, but my world with Sophia, I'm an open book about. I'm actually back doing what I'm doing that I love, I think, because of her and my journey with her. And I get it. I really get it. So I definitely don't hesitate to share that and to integrate those two worlds.
But you've been an amazing guest, Eleni. Thank you for making the time. Was there anything I should have asked that I didn't? I know we kind of went down a bunch of different rabbit holes, but was there anything you want to make sure? And I'm going to include your contact information, but if you want to give it on so people can hear it, it'll also be in the show notes.
Sure. Okay. So my website is www.elenipariss.com. That is ELENIPARISLMFT.com. And you can reach me at 813-609-0438. I'm licensed in the state of Florida. So I should say that anybody that wants to work with me in Florida, virtually, of course, throughout the state, I can do that. They're in the Tampa Bay area and they would like to have in-person therapy, which is up and coming in the next month or so, I hope, then they can reach out to me for in-person therapy in the Tampa Bay area. And if it's somebody outside of the state of Florida and they're looking for any kind of, you know, coaching, consulting in the various areas that I list on my website as well, that's also an option.
And for the listeners, this is being recorded in October. It'll probably be published in December. So definitely be in person by then, I would hope.
Yes.
And I encourage, you know, again, listeners, I encourage you guys, if anything resonated with you or if you have additional questions, email or reach out to Eleni. You know, she's been much nicer than I am about putting the phone number out there, you know, but yeah, reach out. I want all of my listeners to have the best lives they can. And my ignorance probably came through on therapy, but I do believe it can do a lot to helping us all have a better, more richer experience with our partners, our spouses, and our children.
Well, thank you. I am so delighted to have had this time with you. I thank you for, you know, inviting me. And this was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Eleni Paris. She and I have known each other for a little while, and I really wanted to bring her on to get her take on therapy. I do feel therapy is important. I think it plays an important role in everybody's life. As I mentioned during the interview, I'd rather it be preventative than reactive. I do think that some of the marriages that are ending perhaps may not have gotten this far if the couples had been able to engage with a therapist, perhaps to rekindle or keep the spark alive. I know firsthand how difficult it can be raising a child. So I'm not here to pass judgment or say you're doing it wrong. I definitely make and have made my mistakes in the past. I'm just trying to be much more proactive myself with engaging with therapists before I, in air quotes, need it. there are other options out there. BetterHelp is an online therapy, and you know, perhaps you would find a resource in your state. I haven't had a whole lot of luck with that in Maryland, trying to find therapists that are available and familiar with certain diagnoses. And I think that's probably something that's going to be, you know, around the country. So if you have specific concerns, be it LGBTQ+, or a specific mental health diagnosis, or cognitive disability, or what have you, maybe it's cultural. Maybe you're from another culture and you want to make sure you relate, you find somebody that relates to you. Take the time to find the right one, and I think it'll pay dividends. Until next time, thanks for listening.